now, your hosts for Life from the Pulpit, here's Nick Perez.
Yes, and how's it? And welcome to Life from the Pulpit, the fastest half-hour podcast in the West, where I, your humble correspondent, the voice of the valley, Nick Perez, offer up news and views you can use on Scripture and society with a little help from my friends. Yes, this is the fastest half-hour podcast in the West, the cutting edge in biblical exposition. Greetings, and welcome to the program. All right, I want to continue talking about Daniel, the book of Daniel, and we're in chapter 10. Chapter 10, the best way I know how to explain this, it's prologue. It's a setup for chapters 11 and 12. And so this is all Daniel here and his reaction to a vision which he has. So let's go ahead and dive in here. Daniel chapter 10, beginning in verse 1. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia. And again, it depends upon who you ask. Dates vary, but I'm going with the date 537 BC, somewhere in there. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a word was revealed to Daniel, who was named Belteshazzar. Again, we saw that over in chapter 1 when he and his three compadres had their names changed by Nebuchadnezzar. And the word was true, and it was a great conflict, a great war. That's what he sees in this vision. And he understood the word and had understanding of the vision. So what we see here as we go through, we're going to see Daniel, his reaction here. Verse 2, in those days I, Daniel, was mourning for 3 weeks. I ate no delicacies, no meat, no wine. No wine entered my mouth, nor did I anoint myself at all for 3 full weeks, 21 days. Now, that's significant. We're going to come back to that a little later on. But that's Daniel's reaction. Fasting, mourning, probably some weeping that goes along with this. And it all has to do with the content of the vision. The content of this vision, which looks forward to a terrifying and horrible history, which is going to take place under a guy named Antiochus Epiphanes IV. That's when the apocalypse, the apocalypsin, that thing which is covered, will be revealed, unveiled. So Daniel, he, again, no delicacies, no meat or wine. This is a fast. At least the language of fasting. In times of pressure and difficulty, God's people tend to fast. On the 24th day, verse 4, 24th day of the first month, I was standing on the bank of the great river, that is the Tigris. That's where Daniel is now. I lifted up my eyes and looked, and behold, a man clothed in linen with a belt of fine gold from Uphaz around his waist. It's very interesting. His body was like beryl. His face like the appearance of lightning. His eyes like flaming torches. His arms and his legs like the gleam of burnished bronze. The sound of his words like the sound of a multitude. All this very fascinating here, which all of this has parallels to another vision that's had over in Ezekiel chapter 1, verses 26 through 28. Also, you compare this with Revelation chapter 1, especially verses 13 and 15. And just notice, you can line up a lot of these things. His eyes like flaming torches, that's verse 14 of Revelation 1. Legs that gleam to burnished bronze. And also the sound of his words, like the sound of a multitude, Revelation 1, verse 15, belt of fine gold. That's Revelation 13. So you see all these parallels here. And so that leads many scholars here to see the celestial revealer as Jesus in pre-incarnate form in the Old Testament. That seems to fit with what we're seeing here in Daniel. At any rate, here's Daniel, bank of the Tigris River. Is that literal? Is it in the vision? We don't know. It would seem like it would might be literal, but Daniel, he portrays himself to be there at least, even if this is a vision. And this guy shows up, and it seems to be Jesus before he comes in the flesh in the New Testament. Again, just the language sort of seems to indicate that. Now, what's Daniel's reaction? Not just, we've seen his reaction to the vision, fasting, mourning, weeping, all that stuff. What about his reaction to this celestial being who shows up? Verse 7, and I, Daniel, alone saw the vision. He's the only one who sees this vision. Now, there were men who were with me. They didn't see the vision. Again, verse 7, but a great trembling fell upon them, and they hid themselves. So again, the presence of these companions seems to indicate that this was probably a literal thing. Here they are, this group, they've gathered out at the Tigris for whatever purpose, and Daniel has this vision. He's the only one who sees the vision. But they get scared, and they run off. They fled to hide themselves, right? They take off, they're out of there, but Daniel, he's still there. He's left alone, verse 8, so I was left alone and saw this great vision, and no strength was in me. My radiant appearance was fearfully changed. You may have a textual note there. My splendor was changed to ruin. The color of his face changed. Turned white as a ghost, you might say. Death-like paleness, right? That's how one writer talks about it. And so here's Daniel. This is his it seems like he just passes out. And by the way, that seems to be a common reaction when people come into the presence of the divine. They lose control of all bodily function. Isaiah, Ezekiel, John in the Revelation, they fall face down. Notice this. Verse 9, then I heard the sound of his voice, and as I heard the sound of his words, I fell on my face in deep sleep with my face to the ground. Again, he seems to just pass out. It's a terrifying thing to be in the very presence of deity. Just kind of goes out. Goes unconscious. All right. Now, what happens? Again, this is all set up to what we're going to see in verses 11 or chapters 11 and 12. But in the meantime, this celestial being, which again seems to be the pre-incarnate Christ, he's on a mission. Verse 10. And behold, a hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. Daniel's revived a bit here. Verse 11, he said to me, O Daniel, man greatly loved. What an epithet. To be greatly loved. Loved by whom? God. That seems to be. Daniel is one who is highly esteemed by God. Notice, O Daniel, man greatly loved, understand the words that I speak to you and stand upright. For now I have been sent to you, and when he had spoken this word to me, I stood up trembling, still a little uneasy, but he gets up. Notice, verse 12, then he said to me, fear not. That is a theme throughout all of Scripture, fear not. Someone has said it's in the Bible 365 times, one for every day of the year, but at any rate, fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and humbled yourself before you got your God, your words have been heard, and I have come because of your words. God has heard you, Daniel. That's what the messenger here is saying. And since God heard you in your humiliation, in your mourning, in your fasting, and all those things, that's why this messenger was sent. Now, And so that's the celestial being talking to Daniel here. Now, notice verses 13 and 14, a very interesting occurrence happens. The prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days, but Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me. I was left there with the kings of Persia and came to make you understand what is to happen to your people in the latter days. For the vision is for days yet to come. It's interesting. Something. And again, the 21 days here corresponds back earlier in the narrative, as we saw with Daniel. The 21 days corresponds to verses 2 and 3, the 21 days of fasting and mourning and all those things. But this celestial being had a 21-day layover, it would seem, as a result of this prince of Persia, prince of the Persians. What's this all about? And the language, it's almost as if he was locked in some sort of struggle in the spiritual realm behind the scenes. 21 days he's resisted. This isn't an earthly prince. This is a celestial prince of Persia. Some enemy from the dark side. Persia has behind it a prince, it would seem, that's supporting them. And this prince is locked in some kind of struggle. Whoever he is, he's on the opposite side, obviously. He's not helping this celestial being talking to Daniel get to where he needs to be. And this all harkens back to Ephesians 6, doesn't it? Our struggle isn't with flesh and blood. It's against the powers that are out there in the spiritual realm, the forces of darkness. And for a moment here, at least for verses 13 and 14, the veil, the curtain, as it were, is pulled back a little bit. It tells us a little bit about the behind the scenes that's going on in terms of nations. You have workers, it would seem, that, I don't know, they represent a particular nation or what, but you have these dark celestial beings who are working against God. But God also has his workers behind it as well, doing what he wants accomplished. I think of passages like 2 Corinthians 11, verse 14, about how Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. There seems to be this angel of darkness, which is representative of the Persian world power. And this celestial being had a struggle for 21 days. And then Michael the archangel comes to his assistance, and he's able to go on his way. Again, the spiritual struggle takes place. It's real. It's a very real thing. Michael has to step in, help this messenger out. Again, that's just what he says. This shows us God is really involved in the events of this earth. Listen, the whole world lies under the power of the evil one, 1 John chapter 5. The God of this earth is at work. But we have the God of all, who is ultimately on the side of his people. He's on our side. Well, what is this celestial messenger, his mission? What's he doing here? Again, that's a little bit about 13 and 14. Let's press on here. Again, there's something in the spiritual cosmic realm going on there. We only get glimpses of, and this is one of those instances where the veil is pulled back for a moment. And we get just the briefest of glimpses. I don't want to build a full theology on this, but it seems like there's something going on there in terms of nations, spiritual forces of darkness, in opposition to the forces of God and that sort of thing. Listen, God always wins, okay? Whether in this lifetime or the next, God always wins, and he's on our side. Now, what's the mission? Let's look here and see verse 15. When he had spoken to me according to these words, I turned my face toward the ground and was mute. I want to emphasize this point as well. This celestial messenger has, verse 14, come to make you understand what is to happen to your people, Daniel, in the latter days. The meaning of this vision is exclusive to Daniel and the Jewish people. You and your people, the Israelites, the Jews, the Hebrews, and them only. Now, there are a lot of people who want to take Daniel chapter 11 and 12, and just shove them into the future arbitrarily. And so we're looking for this Antichrist, quote-unquote, figure, even though that's not the word that's used here, the language that's used here, in the latter days. That's yet future. Everyone wants to push this stuff in the future. However, the latter days refers to the times of Antiochus Epiphanes IV. He's coming along in the 2nd century BC. He's going to do some real damage to the Israelites, the Jews, the Hebrews, Daniel's people. And again, it's going to be a bad, bad time. For the Jewish people. And I've dealt with that a little bit. We'll dive into that some more when we actually deal with Daniel chapter 11. But ultimately, again, this involves the Hebrew people. Now, there will be other peoples, other nations that are involved in that. Antiochus Epiphanes IV, he wasn't a Jew. But this is going to have a direct effect on Daniel and on his people. We need to keep this thing in that proper context. Now, Daniel's response to the celestial messenger. Let's get on to that. Verse 15, he turns to the ground, he's mute. Behold, one in the likeness of the children of men, a man touched my lips. Then I opened my mouth and spoke. I said to him who stood before me, O my Lord, by reason of the vision, pains have come upon me, and I retain no strength. How can my Lord's servant talk with my Lord? For now, no strength remains in me, no breath is left in me at all. So that's his reaction to what's going to happen. And it involves this desolation and the desecration of the temple, which is going to be rebuilt in the years to come after Daniel. The temple's not yet rebuilt. That's in the third year of Cyrus's reign. It's not yet been restored, but it will be. And Daniel sees in a vision the desolation of that temple. Daniel sees it rebuilt and then desecrated and desolated by what's going to happen here in Daniel chapter 11. And it just... He just... In all likelihood, he probably saw the destruction of the temple before. When he was a young man. Saw that when Nebuchadnezzar came on the scene. And now in a vision, he sees it restored only to be destroyed and or desolated and desecrated once again. No strength remains left in me. I'm breathless. This is the vision that I have seen is breathtaking. That's what Daniel's saying. Now, the messenger, the celestial being, has some encouragement for Daniel. First, we've already seen he touches his lips so he can speak. So he is somewhat strengthened. And then notice his words to Daniel. Once again, verse 18. Again, one having the appearance of a man touched me and strengthened me. So there's the touch, there's the strengthening. And he said, verse 19, O man greatly loved. Again, what an epithet. To be greatly loved by God. Daniel, he's a man of high esteem. Fear not. Again, in the same message that we saw a little earlier, verse 12, fear not, peace be with you, be strong and of good courage. And as he spoke to me, I was strengthened and said, let my Lord speak, for you have strengthened me. Just the touch was strengthening. And again, if this is the pre-incarnate Christ, isn't that reminiscent of what he does in the Gospels. Just the touch from Jesus. And even you get the woman with the issue of blood. Even if I can just touch him, power will come out. And power does go out. Jesus had that kind of power. So maybe just maybe this is the pre-incarnate Christ. He's telling Daniel, look, you are loved very much by God, loved by Jesus. And then notice verse 20. He said, do you know why I have come to you? But now I will return to fight against the prince of Persia. And when I go out, behold, the prince of Greece will come. The messenger's going to return. He's got a struggle, a spiritual struggle that's going to take place again with the prince of Persia. And then the prince of Greece. So already we have a little bit of interpretation of the prophecy that's coming. This is about Persia and then Greece. Don't let anybody tell you chapter 11 is something shoved into the future, yet future in its fulfillment. No, no, no. Prince of Persia, then the prince of Greece, the power that is to be, they will come into power. That's what this is about. Verse 21, but I will tell you what is inscribed in the book of truth. There is none who contends by my side against these except Michael, your prince. The prince of Greece, he's about to come. And a detailed explanation is what's going to follow. Listen, I want to remind you, Daniel chapter 10 only deals with Daniel's reaction to the vision and then this conversation with this celestial person, which appears to be the pre-incarnate Christ, who comes to Daniel 21 days after he has the vision to assist him in understanding that vision. And that vision pertains to not only the prince of Persia, but what's to come, the prince of Greece. And so what follows, except for, again, this brief introduction here at the end of chapter 10, what follows is the explanation by this celestial being. And again, that the explanation is found in Daniel chapters 11 and 12. Yeah, I got a couple minutes here. Let me deal with something real quick. Just build a brief timeline as an introduction to chapter 11. Verse 1 of chapter 11, as for me, in the first year of Darius the Mede, I stood up to confirm and strengthen him. Now I will show you the truth. Behold, three more kings shall arise in Persia, and the fourth shall be far richer than all of them. The four more Persian kings are Cambyses, 530 to 522, Pseudo-Smerdis, 522, Darius the First, 522 to 485, and then Xerxes, or Ahasuerus, he shows up in Esther, 485 to 465, and he is a strong, wealthy guy, very wealthy, and he's going to, again, be wealthy and be rich. Those are the four princes. That's all set up there. That's all history that's being explained here. In these first couple of verses that are relevant to Daniel chapter 10. Again, you got the prince of Persia. All this is leading up to the prince of Greece. That is the power, the kingdom that is Greece, that is going to rise up. Alexander the Great is going to lead that. And it's going to get real bad in the future for the Jewish people. Let me get to the sponsor for this half hour. It's the Merced Church of Christ, located at 2050 Yosemite Parkway. The Merced Church of Christ is comprised of people devoted to the Word of God, people devoted to the worship of God, and people devoted to the work of God. Our purpose is to see as many people as possible following Jesus as closely as possible, all toward a more united fellowship. The Merced Church of Christ meets every Lord's Day, that's Sunday, for Bible study at 9:30 a.m., evening or morning worship at 10:30 a.m., and evening worship at 6 p.m. We also meet for midweek services on Wednesday for Bible study at 7 p.m. She's served by her preaching minister, yours truly. Go online and visit www.mercedchurchofchrist.org. Merced Church of Christ. Relational, reliable, real. All right, let me get to the question of the day.
Question of the day.
Question for the day. Can we all understand the Bible alike? Can we all understand the Bible alike? There are some who claim, Yeah, that, you know, hey, your interpretation is your interpretation, my interpretation is my interpretation. You understand the Bible one way, I understand it another. Neither of us should condemn the other one. But in reality, is there really such a thing as understanding the Bible differently? I mean, yes, that happens, but if two people differ on the meaning of a biblical text, one of them must be wrong, or perhaps even both of them are wrong. A passage doesn't yield two different interpretations. Somewhere there must be a misinterpretation. Someone must be mistaken, because a passage of Scripture only has one meaning. You know, we operate daily on the assumption that we make ourselves to be understood by other people. For example, a well-known illustration is of a store who runs a sales ad for a certain day, and things are going to be sold at certain prices. And hundreds of people will flock to that store on the day of that sale. It'll be the correct day, the correct time. I mean, Black Friday. People know when to show up at the stores. They have their sales ad, and so they expect certain items to be sold at certain prices when they show up. How is it that they can all understand the same sales ad alike? Obviously, if we can recognize that we're able to communicate with one another in an intelligent and intelligible fashion, then certainly God, who is infinitely wiser, can clearly make known to us what His will is. And it's understandable and it's intelligible. Now, one could suggest, I suppose, that God could not clearly make known His will and make known Himself, but that reflects upon the power of God. And if one argues that God purposely didn't reveal Himself in an understandable fashion, then that reflects upon His benevolence as the Maker. And if one contends that man has no responsibility to understand and obey the Scriptures, then he shows great ignorance of his own obligations to the God of heaven. Several passages speak to the fact that indeed we can believe and understand. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. We can hear and put into practice. Jesus talked about that on a constant basis. In the book of Acts, chapter 4 and verse 32, we're told that the early church, of the whole multitude of them, they believed and were of one heart and soul. The disciples, the apostles in Acts chapter 1, were of one accord. 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 10 talks about how we are to be of the same mind. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 2 talks about the same thing, how we are to speak the same thing, to speak even the same word with one another. The Apostle Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 17 that we should not be foolish, but we should understand what the will of the Lord is. The implication from Paul seems to be that we can all understand it together, and we can all be of the same mind and understanding. And indeed, again, in other places, 1 Corinthians 10, 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 10, Philippians chapter 2 and verse 2, Paul's what he communicates there betrays the fact that indeed we can understand and be of the same mind and be of the same understanding. So yes, I believe we can all understand it alike. Why don't we? Well, that's another time and another question. But I'm out of time. Feel free to leave a comment on the website. Always like to hear what you have to say. Stop by the Life in the Pulpit blog, www.lifeinthepulpit.wordpress.com. All my commentary there on Luke, James, 1 John, all there, all available, all free for you to use and peruse in your everyday Bible study. Also, check out the Facebook page. Search Life from the Pulpit on Facebook. Like the Life from the Pulpit Facebook page. Get all the updates when I go live with a podcast or update the blog. Also, follow me on Twitter, at InPulpit, at the letter N, as in Nick, Pulpit, P-U-L-P-I-T. Stop by the Merced Church of Christ website, mercedchurchofchrist.org, mercedchurchofchrist.org. Plenty of sermon audio there to help you grow in your daily Bible study. And, as always, brethren, grace be with you all. Thanks for listening.